the Duke Love of Primrose. Radio. There's the little jingle. All right, I don't know if that previous part was recorded, but welcome everyone to the Ask Tall Paul Radio Show. This is Tall Paul, and I have a very special guest, Paul Wheaton, the permaculture giant himself, the Duke of Permaculture. Your Grace, how are you today?
I'm doing much better now that you call me Your Grace.
Well, I mean,
I think you're the second person to have ever actually uttered the phrase Your Grace to me.
Well, I mean, someone of your dignity and your stature should absolutely be honored as the person that you are, right?
Well, I think maybe that's true if I were actually a duke, then. But then we were in England or something like that. But as an American, I imagine that there's a lot of people in England that are kind of like, no, that's not cool, man. You can't just do that, man.
Well, in my realm, we can do that, all right. And I know,
right. This is America.
In the permaculture realm, you're certainly recognized as one of the key leaders, cutting edge. And the good part about you, I believe, is that you challenge people. You're not afraid to speak your mind. You are, I was at one of your conferences, and you said that, you know, on one end you have the nice permaculture people who don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, and then you have someone at the other end who, well, why don't you describe yourself?
I think you just pointed out that I'm at the other end. I'm not, you just said that I'm not at the nice people end of that spectrum.
Now.
So, no, it's so true. When I give a presentation wherever I go, I try to start off by talking about how most permaculture people are very lovely, sweet people. And what people are about to experience, one of my presentations should not be held against those people. I think that this makes it so that the other permaculture people will still talk to me. But yes, I venture away from a lot of the permaculture norms, and even though I have my own philosophies about permaculture that are quite different. It does seem like I have the largest audience.
Well, you do. I mean, tell us about your permaculture empire.
So the forums at permies.com are the main thing. I think we get about, I don't know, 600,000 or 700,000 people there each month. And then the YouTube videos are another big part, and I think I've got 155 videos, I think, and that gets about 500,000 people per month, and then of course there's my richsoil.com site where I keep all my articles and where the podcasts are, and that's several hundred thousand, and so that's what I call the empire, and not that I'm an emperor or making any claim to be. I mean, what do you call it when you got three big internet gobs and you want to refer to them collectively? My website gob? So,
yes.
I go with empire. I don't know. Everybody's got a little web empire.
Well, yeah, and I absolutely, you know, like one of the messages that I give to people is that everyone out there has a different piece of the puzzle. So, like, you know, you are very good about being out there in front of people. You can communicate well. You have your videos, your podcasts, your forums. You have, you know, you lecture all across the nation and perhaps the world. And, you know, that's not for everybody. They can't do that. They don't want to do that. But they might be really good about, you know, like promoting. If they just posted this episode on Facebook into their circle of influence, then they're helping to spread the word about permaculture. Other people might actually work in the garden, or some people are interested in energy conservation. You know, there's something different for everyone. Not everyone's into everything. And so we need people like you who aren't afraid to question the established, you know, the people out there. And, I mean, why not? I mean, I love your videos and, you know, you're a scientist, really, and that's why I put that one picture of you on the episode of, you know, in your lab coat. you know.
I got the lab coat out because I had this idea for a video, and I was actually doing some experiments, and I was videoing the experiment, and so I thought it would be fun to wear the lab coat for that. So then there was a gal that came out, and she said she wanted to just take a bunch of pictures of me because she thought she could sell the pictures of me. And so she took those pictures. So, yeah, I guess if people want to get a high-res copy of me in a lab coat, then she's selling those pictures.
Yeah, make it as their desktop background and their screensaver, and they could make a printout and put it next to their bed, and, you know.
I don't think anybody wants to do that. I think so far it seems like the pictures, there's a lot of demand for them. Every week there's somebody saying they need pictures of me because they're writing an article or something. And so then they need pictures for that kind of thing. And so I try to direct them to this gal that took all the pictures and say, well, she sells them. And I don't know what happens from there.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing I want to mention, because we're both like-minded. Well, first of all, we're both very, 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 very tall. I'm 6'7", and I believe you're 6'6".
I am a wee little man compared to you.
So let's remember that next time we see each other. All right. But the next thing is we both wear overalls, and isn't that kind of like mandatory? I don't know.
I don't understand why the other people don't wear overalls. I mean, they are so comfortable. Because other people, they wear, what do they call them? Pants.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not wearing any pants! But when you wear pants, then they're like all pinchy and you can't breathe right. And then if you bend over, then you're showing people the crack of your ass. They want to, like, they're having this perpetual struggle about which is bigger, your belly or your butt. And it's like, you know, if you breathe just right, if you blow air out just right and suck in your stomach, then the belt part is going to go visit your ankles. And it's like, you know what? I don't like that that excitement in my day. And at the same time, I don't like that pinchy around the belly thing. I don't like that. And overalls just have all this spacious room. They're so comfortable. And then there's the pockets. There's so many pockets to put everything. And so, I mean, I can't imagine a day without overalls.
Right. And I mention it just because overalls are part of permaculture. It's a design science. So they're designed a certain way, and they fit into your way of doing permaculture. And anyway, we've had a little fun here, and I just wanted to get things rolling. So let's actually talk about permaculture and what, how did you get started in the beginning? And the other thing is, before we do that, there's no replacement. This podcast is not going to give you enough information. I mean, you absolutely must visit permies.com, permies.com. This is Paul's entry into his empire. I mean, there's just a wealth and just an incredible amount of information. So please go and visit Paul. Sign up for his mailing list, and you will get great information. You'll never a dull moment, okay?
At permies.com, the idea is that that's where the community is. And so the forums are the cornerstone of permies.com. And when I'm on permies.com myself, I try to be more of a community steward, which I suppose means I'm trying to be polite and those kinds of things. But when I go out to richsoil.com, I feel like I can say anything I want. And I, you know, can rant and rage about anything, and I can do whatever I want. So at Permies, I mean, we ask everybody to follow we follow this really strict rule. It's called be nice. And a lot of people on the internet don't understand that rule, and we ban them. So very strict standards on communication style, and I try to work within that myself. So I guess that's the reason why I have why they're divided. One place where I can do whatever I want, and one place where I try to be a part of a community.
All right. And so everyone behave. Be nice.
Okay. And we have a, I mean, there's a plethora of information out there. I mean, the permaculture world is growing so fast, and permies.com is the place where people can come and ask their questions. One of my all-time favorite threads there, somebody posted a picture of this plant, and it was clearly sad. And it was kind of yellow and things, and the guy said, okay, I need to do something for this plant. It looks so sick. And then the first reply was is that it looks like it's deficient in nitrogen and maybe a couple of other nutrients. I would pee on it.
Right.
And then the second response came to talk about why the veins were showing that way and what the different colors meant and said, yeah, peeing on it would give it exactly what it needs. And the third comment said, yes, peeing on it. So then whoever the poster did exactly that. And pee is like, for all practical purposes, sterile. It's not totally perfectly sterile, but for all practical purposes, it can be considered sterile. So they peed on it. The next day, the very next day, they posted a new picture, and it was a green and vibrant plant. This is the kind of thing that goes on at Permies. Innovation, trying new things. How can we take an old, low-tech idea and upgrade it to 2013 without adding any expense? And we've got lots of stuff like that. We've got over 100 forums and, hundreds of thousands of people. So, sorry, a little tangent there. I'm back.
No, but it's important because that's really what we're trying to do is get away from, we're spending, and we're so removed from our millions of years of wisdom, of people that have gone out and grown and, people who live close to the land. Now, I'm not saying that everything has to be free. I mean, there's absolutely opportunity to make a business out of permaculture, and some people are afraid to talk about that. I know you're not.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that a lot of people in the permaculture world believe that anybody who's attempting to make a profit with permaculture, that they try to shame them into poverty. And now I, as the Duke, I'm here to tell you it's okay to make a profit with permaculture. And this is actually something that's been run by the other permaculture bigs, including Bill Mollison, Jeff Lawton, and of course, the mighty, the glorious, the amazing Sepp Holzer. For anybody getting this idea that somebody should feel ashamed to earn a profit with permaculture, I'd like to find out where the hell they got that idea. So are they trying to redefine permaculture to be something else? Because I don't see that anywhere. I think by now I would have spotted something. I have a lot of people that have made shit up. They just make it up and say that this is what permaculture is. And I'm here to tell you they're full of shit. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. And so it's very clear to make a profit. So, yes, I think if somebody wants to go and buy 100 acres – and go onto that land and grow a ton of food, just tons and tons of food, and feed thousands of people for free or for cheap or whatever. That is noble and awesome and great. And if a similar person buys the same amount of land and grows tons and tons of food and feeds thousands of people and sells it for way too much money, I think that's great too. So it's like, but to have the first person or somebody attempt to shame the second person into doing something other than what is their calling, that's just slavery through the power of shame instead of through a gun. And that's not okay. I can't support that in any way, shape, or form. And on top of that, I really like the idea that somebody can go out and grow a bunch of food in a permaculture style, and they can sell it for 10 times more than what food is sold for at Safeway. It shows that there is more value in that food. And I think when other farmers see that there's more value in that food, I think that they will start to compete with each other to get the money in that space. And then, you know, once we start doing that, won't Monsanto basically dry up and blow away?
Well, and what's the harm in it? Meaning, we're already paying food, and you might as well get quality food that's grown locally, as opposed to this fake food or whatever you want to. I mean, we shouldn't probably even call it food, because it's not, a lot of it. And so I think that, like you said, if someone wants to be, you know, give the food away and help everyone, great, that's awesome. If someone else needs, you know, to pay their mortgage and they decide that permaculture is the way they're going to do it, absolutely, let's go for it. There's room for every single solitary knit, you know, like, do with it what you want, but don't call permaculture something that it isn't. Like, a lot of people really, you know, they think it's a philosophy or a movement or something like that, and it really kind of boils down to it's a design science. Is that what you'd say, Paul, or how would you, what is permaculture?
Permaculture is a system that's more aligned with nature so that I can be even lazier.
Yes.
Now, you said something a moment ago that made my stomach do a little bit of a twist, and I wanna kind of come and untwist my stomach by saying that you said you know, something about people having to pay the mortgage.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like I want people, when they start talking about income and making money, I want them to not talk about what they spend their money on, such as paying the mortgage. I mean, shouldn't it be reasonable that people make money because they should be able to pay their mortgage? And I kind of feel like, you know, I think that a person shouldn't have to justify what they spend their money on, because we start getting into this space of like, okay, you know, you did a smart thing. You grew a bunch of permaculture food and then you sold it for a lot of money. And now you have to justify it to me on what you spent that money on. And I'll let you know whether or not I approve. And so what I do is, whenever anybody wants to ask me about, like, you know, any money that I've made or money that a potential farmer might make, what are they going to be spending it on? I say, I sure hope that they spend it on hookers, heroin, and hooch. I hope that they do something really horrible with the money, just downright evil and wicked, because that's their business. Stay out of their business. It's none of your damn business what they do with the money. And it's like, if you've got a better system, then it sounds like you should, if you think charging that much money for permaculture is bad, I encourage you to set up shop right next door and put out food that's even better and sell it for what a price is that you think is reasonable. Because nearly everybody that's going around with shame on their lips is somebody who's not growing a damn thing for anybody. And I have to wonder to myself, if they're on the payroll of Monsanto.
Absolutely. I mean, it, you're right. Yes, Your Grace. Your Grace. Please enlighten us somewhere.
You know, I could get used to this treatment.
Anyway, so, it makes sense. I mean, there's, you know, how many cell phone carriers are out there? How many? It's just, I don't even know why it's an issue.
I like to think of it as the Tesla effect. So, you know, the Tesla Roadster. So before we had the Tesla Roadster, then the public was sure, the general public, that when it came to electric cars, no electric car could go faster than 40 miles per hour, and it couldn't have a range of more than 40 miles. And this had to do with the fact that there were legal limitations put on a vehicle that didn't go through the millions of dollars required for crash testing to be allowed to go faster than 40 miles an hour. So basically, then we came out with the Tesla Roadster, which basically proved that an electric car can go 200 miles an hour and be the fastest vehicle on the road, and be, you know, $100,000, which is cheaper than a Lamborghini, which used to be the fastest thing on the road. And so thus breaking all these misconceptions about electric cars. So I like the idea that you could go into, say, a Whole Foods, and you could go and say, oh, I could buy organic carrots at $1.50 per pound, or I could buy permaculture carrots at $4 a pound. And then there's, like, you know, possibly information about why a person would pay that much. Or the fact that they even have them on the shelves shows that people are actually buying them at the higher rate while there's organic carrots sitting right there. And so it's kind of like, I think people would begin to wonder, well, why would anybody do that? Why? And with that, with asking the question is the beginning of how we're going to convey a lot of this knowledge and why permaculture is so, so vastly superior to what people call organic. Which, by the way, a good time to point out, Paul, you probably know the answer to this. Who determines what organic means?
Yes, go ahead, tell us, Paul.
Oh, come on, I'm testing you, man. I'm thinking you know this one. Am I stumping you?
No.
Who decides what organic means?
Well, I guess the person.
Well, I mean, okay. So
the government.
The government.
Well, I mean, they have these standards that say this is certified organic. But that's
okay.
Not
legitimate. Which office is that? It's the USDA.
Yeah.
So now I'll start filling in. The USDA. And who runs the USDA? Oh, it's Monsanto.
Sure.
So Monsanto is the body that decides what is organic. And so it's like, wow, now, how much do you trust organic now? And then, of course, we could get into my whole thing about, you know, the difference between organic and permaculture. But, you know, that could take up a couple of hours.
Sure.
So, I find that the organic techniques that are used today are distasteful. I think that when somebody grows good permaculture food, that it will cure cancer. And then the food that you can buy at the grocery store that's labeled organic can cause cancer. So an important difference to me. Maybe I'm sure there's a lot of people that think that difference is not there, but I believe the difference is there.
All right. So currently, you walk into a grocery store, there is nothing labeled permaculture carrots.
Correct.
Okay. So, how in the heck do people get permaculture carrots?
That's a great question. I think the best way, of course, is to grow it yourself.
Yes.
And you know, there's this whole area too where I think there's a lot of people that are either A, uncomfortable with even doing any gardening at all, and B, even if they had a garden that and it was just pumping out all the food that they would need, that they don't have any clue how to prepare it, or they want to prepare it, or if they did prepare it, it would taste terrible. And so I think that when we start exploring this, and I think that's a perfectly valid place to be. I think there's some people that want nothing to do with horticulture or gardening or raising animals. They want nothing to do with any of that. And they don't want anything to do with cooking. Nothing. And,
right.
And it's like they've got a job, and I think that's legit. I think that's fair. I think that's fine. And they got a job where they earn good money. And it's like, you know what, I'm just going to go down to the restaurant and I'm going to buy food. And I'm going to buy, you know, it's already prepared and everything. Three meals a day, that's what they do. They eat stuff that has already been prepared. And you know what, I want to hereby, as the Duke of Permaculture, validate that that path is totally cool, totally okay. And on top of that, I think that this is a thing. I don't want to call it a problem. This is a thing that I want to see improvement on. I want things to become better, and the solutions that I'm coming up with are things where I've talked about it in my podcasts and whatnot about how do you get 20 people to live under one roof without stabbing each other. So let's assume for a moment that this could totally happen. You know, and of course, we've all got our experiences from when we were in college, and it didn't work out. And some people have even tried it again as adults, and it didn't work out. And there might be a few people that are listening right now, and they're in a scenario where it's currently working. But let's assume for a moment that it can work, that you go and you live someplace, You have all the comfort that you want, all the privacy that you want. And then when you want to, you can go to the kitchen that is, you know, shared by 20 people, and you can have all the community that you want. You know, you can. That, let's pretend for a moment that all that works out okay. And so setting that aside, because that issue is like 10 times bigger than all the rest of permaculture put together. But let's just pretend for a moment that it's working. Now, let's say there's like a couple of people under this roof that are totally bonkers about growing permaculture food. And there's two or more people, probably four or five people, that are completely bonkers about cooking. And then there's other people in the community that have the things that they're into. And here you are, this fictitious person whom I've decided to name Bob. Bob is there. And Bob likes his job. Bob likes food. Bob doesn't like to cook. And Bob doesn't like to garden. And yet Bob can sit at this table and enjoy good food, good permaculture food, prepared in a great way. And everything is lovely. This is not the only solution. This is a solution. And I think that it's a rare solution at this time. And I hope to come up with things so that this solution could be a solution not for everybody, but maybe a quarter of the population. Just painting a picture of what might be.
All right, that's fair. Are you saying that maybe you're, not that you're focused, but you're going to be spending energy on helping people who are interested in that business aspect or the, you know, this permaculture food for the masses? That's going to be a thing? Or, like, for me, it doesn't matter, but I like to, because I'm just a little guy, I'm not, I don't ever plan to be a big producer, so I'm going to be, you know.
You just called yourself a little guy.
I am a little guy. You know, the name Paul actually means small or little, right?
Oh, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny for you and me and
yeah.
Paul Bunyan. You've heard of him, right?
Yes. And
he's
Paul in the song. And yeah, I mean, so. I mean, my message is really anybody, at least let's get an awareness of it. And if you're not going to do it, like, they're already spending money. Like in your example, you have a great job. You have no interest in growing, but you could pay your gardener or your local permaculture expert to come and put this on your land, and or even buy land for him to start doing it.
And then you've got Francois, who is your cook that you have hired, who goes out to the garden and pulls in the food and makes the most delicious thing. Something like that. So, I mean, but the thing is that's like, you know, okay, how a rich guy lives. Okay, sure. You know, for the 0.1%, there's a possible permaculture path there. I'm trying to think of like, my solution is something where I'm shooting for 25% of the population, and they don't have to be the top 25%. It's like, you know, for lots of folks that can be part of that. Plus, well, anyway, so I mean, I can go on about the value of community living for hours or even days, but the key is to come up with these solutions. I mean, we presented the idea of how do you get permaculture food?
Yeah.
And of course, for a lot of people, I would say for probably 10% of the population, it's obvious. You grow it. And then you prepare it yourself. And there you have your permaculture food. We could talk about things like how do we get it into the grocery store. And I got to say that I think that the key is to reach out to farmers. And I do a lot of this where I visit with a lot of farmers. And but we always start off with the idea of like, okay, here's what you're currently doing. Let's find ways where you can save money. And a lot of times the way that you save money is you cut way back on the money that you're giving to Monsanto. Let's solve those same problems, but let's solve them without giving money to the ChemAg people. And so I'll get into these conversations with these people, and this kind of comes back to what we were originally talking about, And they say, oh, well, what do you call these techniques? And I've learned that when I'm talking to a farmer, it's not really a good idea to say permaculture, because if you do, then they say, I'm not going to make any money blowing rainbows out my ass. Get the fuck off my land.
So, right, because right now the money's in organic, the quote-unquote organic.
Right. And so it's like I think – and I also, eventually I think that if when farmers start traveling down permaculture road, I believe someday that all the food sold in Safeway will be permaculture food, not because the farmers give a shit about, you know, what's good for the world, but entirely because they make more money doing it.
Right.
And then Monsanto and the Chemag boys are gone. Nobody needs them.
You don't think they're going to go into that realm, find a way to get into it?
I think that they are going to be a slippery, wicked fish.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. That's how they roll. But at the same time, I think that by having farmers grow permaculture, but using permaculture techniques and thus making more money, is a strategy to leverage out the toxins that are currently being used on our food so blatantly and heavily. And it's going to be attacking them. I mean, basically, this is a very – if a person – goes and stands in front of Monsanto and shakes their fist and screams all day, I don't think it's going to really do very much. Now, if you can get a million people together and shake their fists and scream all day, it might start to make a little bit of a difference. On the other hand, I think that with the path that we're talking about, with like, look, you can make more money with permaculture than you can with Chemag, then I think we're going to make a complete difference. We can, I mean, with Monsanto, the way that they are right now, and pumping all this toxic gick into all the stuff that we're doing, that, I mean, if nothing else, we just by saying we don't want it anymore, they're going to stop selling it. They're only selling it because there's money in it. And it's like, and now they've kind of got what they went and they made some sort of law that said nobody can sue Monsanto. And it's like, oh, no. I want to fuck up their shit even more than that. I want all their cash flow streams to dry up to nothing. And then they're gone just because people stop feeding the monster. And I really think Permaculture Road does exactly that. So, you know, but the first step is we got to get this knowledge out there.
Yeah, and that's – I was thinking that, you know, you are absolutely doing your part, but what we need everyone else who's listening, who are – you're kind of preaching to the choir because they – you know, the people in the room right now are here because they know who you are and, you know, you broadcast it to your list. But if everyone listening to this could share this podcast and all the other podcasts and Paul's radio you know, his websites and all that, to spread this message on your Facebook and your social media, et cetera, you need to do your part. Paul's doing as much as he can. He's very generous to be here today when he could be doing many other things. But if we're not doing our part, how can we make this change happen?
You know, I like the thought that rather than saying, hey, everybody, go and do your work to make things better, I like the idea that, you know, all this information, I think, is delicious. And it's like, rather than saying, go out and eat your spinach, I think what I want the message to be is, we have unlimited ice cream. Do you want some more? And it's kind of like, I think what happens is, and what's really going to change things, is that I know that throughout Permies, we try to design things as being 10,000 flavors of ice cream. Come and try them all. So come on down, find your bit of ice cream, and it's a and then digest it and be like, that was delicious. And then when you have the opportunity, tell people about an ice cream. You can just tell one person, tell 20 people, post a piece of ice cream on your Facebook page or whatever. And this is how we change things. This is how it becomes. So enjoy the ice cream, and then tell people, I ate some delicious ice cream. So it's not about eating your greens. It's about eating ice cream.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, in your circle, I mean, you're surrounded by it all day. You might not realize. I mean, when I talk about permaculture, I would say 99% of the people say, "What? What's that?" And I, you know. So, if I could just say ice cream, it'd be awesome. But for some reason, I have to always explain this, and it's like, oh goodness, you know. So.
It's a hard thing. I mean, basically, usually where I start talking about it, when I come into somebody who's never heard about permaculture or whatever, I don't even use the word. You know, I find things that they're doing, and they want things to be better, or they're going to try a thing, and then usually there's something where some flavor of ice cream that I've enjoyed in the past, and I can tell them about a bit of ice cream that I've enjoyed in the past. And then they'll be, you know, usually it's kind of like, wow, that is an interesting thing. I hadn't thought of that. And then they go on their merry way. And then sometimes when they really enjoy something, then I say, and that's permaculture. And then what the idea is that after I've shared with them, you know, 15 different flavors of permaculture and that or 15 different flavors of ice cream, and then I've said permaculture at the end of each one, then they start to get this idea of like, and I've heard this word permaculture so much, I'm going to go look it up and see if I can find more.
So the flavors of ice cream, would you say, are like going green and sustainability?
No.
Okay, well, what are those words?
What does that mean, going green? Well, I mean, people think those fucking light bulbs are going
it's
green.
It's just bait.
I don't need to hear anymore what you have to say about going green. I heard about the stupid light bulbs. Let me tell you, folks. Those light bulbs are a toxic shitstorm. Those are not a green thing. As the Duke of Permaculture and as the guy that's been dubbed Hardcore Green by treehugger.com, I'm here to tell you those things are terrible. Don't get them out of your home. They are a nightmare. They're bad. Okay, but so no, the word sustainable, I mean, I hear it all the time, and it's become empty. The green, so often anything that's called green is greenwashing. And it's like, I just kind of feel like, let's not even look at those things anymore. What I prefer to do is to say, hey, Paul, did you know that with a small compost pile, you can get 500 hot showers out of it? Isn't that weird? Ain't that a deal? And then, hey, Paul, did you know that when you go and you take a bunch of wood that you were going to throw into the waste stream and instead pile it up in your yard with some soil on top of it, that you can grow a garden in that? That you don't have to water. It just the wood rots and acts like a sponge, and all that winter rain gets locked up in there to feed all your plants all summer long. Ain't that a deal? And then I think, I mean, so like right now, the amount of conflict that we have in our country between people is tremendous. It seems like it's far more extreme than it was when I was a much younger man. And to me, the root of all conflict is a difference of knowledge set. And so each one of these things is a tidbit of knowledge. All you got to do is say, hey, here's a funny thing, and share it. That's it. Because now so many people have gotten to this gut reaction that when they hear the word green or eco or sustainable, to tune it out. It sounds like somebody's about to feed you some damn nasty spinach. And what they really like is ice cream. And when I tell you about the 500 hot showers from a small compost pile, that is an ice cream thing. It's like, that's kind of cool. I didn't know you could do that.
Paul, I will, if you want it, I'll let you have it. But I think I'm going to register permacultureicecream.com today. I mean, really.
Go for it, man.
Okay. I mean, I guess where I'm coming from is, you know, everyone goes to Google, Bing, Yahoo to find information, and they're not typing in ice cream. They're not typing that in. They're typing in sustainability, going green, recycling, you know, all these buzzwords, keywords. So, I mean, is that wrong? On this episode, I said, I forget the actual title, but something about Paul Wheaton gets us going green. And I only use that because that's, I think, how people think of it. And then if we start using green or sustainability, you know, that, those types of words in conjunction with the word permaculture, we're teaching them as we go what this thing is, this permaculture is all about.
Well, I mean, do people, when they want...
They're really that dumb, Paul. They don't...
When people go and look on Google, are they looking for, like, I want to be more green? And I mean, are they typing that in?
Yes, they
are. I mean, I think when people go to Google and they're looking something up, my understanding is that research says that most people go and look up boobies. So it's kind of like... Or it's like, oh, I'm trying to do a thing in my house. And so this is something where I accidentally stumbled into it, because back in the earliest days of the internet, before there was Google, then there were these other search engines, and I'd written a web browser. And anyway, I've got the software engineering background.
Yeah.
But the big thing is that I had written this article at one point about lawn care, and I needed to have a way of being able to learn how to make a web page. So I just... That was my very first web page ever, and I put it up, and just the text, and I was able to look at it through a browser, through everything, and it's like, oh, well, now I've put something on the internet. And then I went around about my day. And so basically the little article that I had written before the internet was popular, so this is like I wrote the article, I think, in 1994. It was called Organic Lawn Care for the Cheap and Lazy. And it was never published anywhere. It was something that I wrote for a little local club, and to teach people about lawn care. And the mission of the article is to basically say, save your money. Don't spend your money on toxic gig. And so you'll have a much better lawn just following these simple tips. And so I put together this article, and I put it up, and it was number one on all the search engines, not because it was a great article, but entirely because there weren't any others.
Yeah.
The internet was a bit lean back then. And so then I was number one on search. And then Google came along, and I was number one on Google. And there's a long, rich story there. But the key is that I kind of came to this conclusion one day. There's all these people that have a brand new lawn. They're young. They've never cared for a lawn before. And now they're going to care for it. So they wanted to look it up on the internet and see how do you, what's the quick and easy way to care for a lawn so I don't have to mow so much. So they came to my article, and I taught them to not buy Weed and Feed. And so I came to this conclusion that based upon the feedback that I had, where there's gobs of people writing to me saying, I'm no longer going to ever buy Weed and Feed, and I'm not going to use any toxic gick. And the number of people that had viewed the article, I came to the conclusion that I had saved the world several train loads, not train cars, but whole trains of like 100 cars of toxic gick. And it's like, I've made a large positive impact on the world. So when we're talking about what people are looking for on Google, in order to learn how to be green or to learn about permaculture, I don't think the vector is that people are typing in green or typing in permaculture. I think that the important thing to do is that they're typing in something about they're going to do in the middle of their day, and that's an opportunity for us to try and write something that they'll catch, and then we'll change them. I also think that, like, you're going to have a bunch of – let's say you've got 10,000 people listening to this audio thing, this podcast-ish thing. And then, so 10,000 people. And those 10,000 people go out and find one thing about that's a good, healthy thing, that I think is a good, healthy thing anyway. And then they go and they tell two people. I think that in itself has a large positive impact right there. But if they go and they share 10 things with 100 people, then, that's even more. And it's not about being perfect or being the all-consuming voice for the world. It's about making things better. And making things better is usually hard work. But you know what? Sometimes that hard work turns out to be like just an easy little mention of something, at your 4th of July picnic with your family, and you've got weird Uncle Ed sitting right there, and you mention the thing about 500 hot showers from one small compost pile. That's one seed that you planted. You planted one tiny seed in somebody's head. And then by the end of the day, maybe you'll have planted four seeds. And now you've made the world better. Not all better, but better. And then maybe each day you can plant one more seed with one more person. And it's like, this is at the end of the year, maybe you have planted over 1,000 seeds. And this is how things change. And at no point in time did you say green or sustainable or eco. It's about we've now made the gap between our knowledge sets smaller, so there's less conflict, and at the same time we've planted seeds of things that make things better.
All right, sounds good. I have a weird Uncle John. I'm going to talk to him about this today.
Okay. All right.
So that sounds good. Now, I know coming up next year in March, you're going to be a keynote speaker at the Permaculture Voices Conference in Temecula, California. Tell me about the conference and what your thoughts are.
I am huge excited for this conference. The idea that we're going to have all these big brains under one roof at the same time is something I just want to see it. I've been to so many different conferences, and I've been to speaking at so many different events, and it just seems like it always seems small. And granted, you're talking to some people, and it helps, and it's good, but it's kind of like you're not getting this industrial strength picture. And then in my past life as a software engineer, there was this one conference I thoroughly enjoyed, in which case it seems like the biggest brains in the industry would come together once a year. And I feel like I learned like 2 years of stuff in 5 days. And I feel like my ability as a software engineer was propelled forward by 2 years. And I've been craving an event like that. So often I go to an event, and I'm the keynote speaker. And so, and it's like there'll be one or two of the things where I feel like that was pretty good. But usually I go to a presentation, and it's like, first of all, the speaker is kind of freaked out that I'm sitting there in their presentation. And I'm trying to like not make them freaked out. But oh no, Paul Wheaton's here, and now I'm going to be sad. And I make them nervous and everything. I like to go to a conference, and there's usually a couple of the sessions that I enjoy, but a lot of them kind of seem like they're for, you know, a permaculture 101 crowd. They're just the very beginning stuff. I want to go to the stuff where it's meaty, where it's like it's the bigs, and they're going to debate, and they're going to share their different views. And I just kind of feel like, what if these guys, which have been such independent thinkers, can hear from the other bigs directly, engage them directly? Is it possible that each of the bigs will walk out of this and they'll be like 2 years more advanced than if the event had never happened? Will this propel our permaculture knowledge, our collective permaculture knowledge, forward in some big way? Is it possible that one of the bigs is going to hear one of the other bigs, and then there'll be a like 5 or 6 points that'll come across like, wow, I never thought of that. And now this big thinker guy is going to be coming up with some brand new idea that hasn't come out from anybody yet. So is this – I just kind of feel like this conference is going to propel permaculture forward in an enormous way. And I'm looking forward to meeting. In fact, there's a lot of the bigs I've never even met. So I'm very much looking forward to this event. I'm very excited about it.
Well, I mean, there's nothing like it. And you're right. You go to your local permaculture expo or whatever they want to call it, a convergence, and you have a lot of well-meaning people who are doing their best to give information. But when you have global notoriety, you know, people who are literally the cutting edge leaders within the permaculture realm, there's nothing like it. And if you start saving now, or if you've got the money, come on down. You got to go. And speaking of that, if we've been given a discount, if you go to the link that's on this episode, you can click on the link that says buy a ticket to the conference. And if you do it by midnight July 6th, you'll get a $55 discount.
Just oh, man. Really?
You're a friend of Paul Wheaton.
Oh, does So do they have to admit to that? That would be so awesome.
Well, the code...
You have to say that you like Paul Wheaton in order to get $55. That would be cool.
Well, I don't... That's half truth. Because the promo code is Paul Paul, and you're either Paul Wheaton or Paul Tall Paul fan. So giving us both credit there. But anyway, I'm very excited, and that's... I definitely have committed to promoting it because I want people need to know about it. And there's never been anything like it. And I hope this is the first of many, many to come because it's important. We need to go there. And just like your message today, that we can have permaculture carrots and permaculture ice cream, let's go for it. And, you know, I just think that, like you said, when one leader is going to say something else, and that might spark a completely new idea in someone else's head, and wow, I mean, nothing but good can come of it.
I think that this event's going to be really, really a big one. But I hope that people buy their tickets now rather than later. Not only because you get the $55, which is awesome. I didn't know that they would do that. I got to go tell all my people about the $55 thing. The idea is that if they buy it now, I like the idea of the event being able to say, oh, we're all sold out. Those of you that were waiting to see, then you don't get a ticket. You don't get to go. Because I do know that I was Diego, the guy that's doing the event, that he was talking to me at some point in time, and it's like he's got a couple of other bigs that are like lined up, but the bigs are currently saying, I don't know if I should go. How many people are going to be there? And so I think it would be awesome to be able to say, oh, there's going to be 800 or whatever is the – I think that's about the capacity of the event is like 800. And I know one of them was Sepp Holzer. They're like feeling out the whole thing, like, well, how many people are going to be there, you know? And it's like, well, I don't know. We got to put your name on it first and then get that people to come. And so I think that if you can get people, you know, get those tickets sold now, then we can get even more bigs in. I know that I've had five or six different speakers that have contacted me and asked me that very question. It's like, well, I'm thinking about being a presenter at this event. Do you know how many people are going to be there? What have you heard? And of course, my first answer is, okay, get off the phone with me, call up, nail down that you're speaking there, because if you don't, you will be sad. And so.
Well, and the other way is there's ways to get in for free, meaning, or partially free, where you can... If you truly are thinking of going to permaculture business, you could write it off. Or let's say you're in a mainstream corporation and your company needs to, I'm sorry to use the word, Paul, but go green. They might need, you could say, look, I need to go to this conference. And corporations don't care. I mean, it's literally built in the budget where they have people who are in their operations group or, you know, you come and you just choose this conference instead of the one that's really boring that you don't like. Come here and learn some new stuff, and you can start incorporating that into your business or not. But it's a way to come to beautiful, sunny Southern California. And if we could get Sepp Holzer, my goodness, I mean, come on, everyone. You got to sign up today, get that $55 discount. What's your excuse, really?
So I, you know, and I know that Sepp Holzer, when he has his spare time, he usually doesn't hobnob with the little people. But and I don't know about like people like Michael Pollan. I know I just spent like 2 days, a couple of days ago, hanging out with Joel Salatin, and I know that he hangs out with everybody. And I know that whenever I go to an event, I spend a huge portion of time making myself available at meals and all the in-between stuff and answering questions and stuff like that. I really enjoy visiting with everybody. And so I don't know, how often do you get a chance to like visit with folks? I think that would be a great question to put to Diego is, you know, like list off all of the presenters and then say, okay, how long are they going to – are they going to be there for the whole event or just a day? And then how much do we get to visit with them? I know it was cool being a presenter. I was at an event this couple of days ago, and when Joel Salatin was there, what they did was is that they whisked all the presenters away to get our own little private lunch and stuff like that. They did a lot of things where it's like, okay – now the presenters get to be protected from the mob over here. So I got to hang out with Joel Salatin quite a bit. And that was really awesome. But back to this event, the Permaculture Voices, please, you know what? I'm begging you, buy your ticket, not right now, but right fucking now. You got to get it immediately. Because this is important stuff here. This is what's going to really change things. Let's get this change moving forward, and I'm certain that this event is gonna not only be an excellent thing to simply attend, but I think that this is going to be a catalyst and a moving into a big positive forward change.
Amen. Absolutely. Paul, you've been wonderful today. We only have about 2 minutes left, 2.5 minutes. And I just wanted to thank you so much for, you know, your leadership within permaculture and for speaking your mind, not being afraid to be different. And, you know, that's, I think we all need that. We each need to be different. And otherwise, we'd all know each other's jokes, right?
We should all stand up for what we believe is good and right and decent.
Yes, buy permaculture carrots, permaculture ice cream, and, you know, whatever. Is there anything else you'd like to plug at this last 2 minute mark?
I would like to plug that I've been doing a lot of work in the last week and a half or so with the Farmstead Meatsmith guys. They've got a Kickstarter going on right now. I get nothing out of it, but I just think that their work is fantastic. We've got a thread set up at Permies. If you go to permies.com/meat. It'll take you to the thread. It's got all of their videos there, which, by the way, are amazing. I think if a vegan watched all four videos, they might say, I'll make an exception. I'll eat this meat because this is meat about a relationship, a healthy, good, healthy relationship with a good, healthy animal.
Yeah, and no waste. I mean, they use every speck of, you know, it's just a beautiful, it's very interesting, you know, I absolutely recommend watching the videos. All right, Paul, well, thank you so much. I would like to invite you back anytime you'd like, and again, your grace, it's been wonderful for you to have graced us with your presence.
And thanks for having me out, Paul. It's only about once every 2 years I find anybody taller than me, and so, and the fact that you're bonkers about permaculture and you wear overalls and you know the whole thing, it's like wow, it's like I've met my brother.
There you go. And you're welcome anytime you want to San Diego, you know that. And we'll see you when we see you, and we'll definitely see you at the Permaculture Voices conference. So sign up right now at permaculturevoices.com. Promotion code until July 6th at midnight is Paul. Details are on this episode web page. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later. Bye, Paul.
Bye.